Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/filmwaxradio. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. It's Adam Shartoff, host of Film Wax Radio, a podcast about independent film. I interview the best and the brightest. Well, not always the best or the brightest, truthfully, but whoever's available and agrees to come on the show. It's just a little clumsier way of describing my guests. No, of course not. I kid. 366 is the number of this episode, if you can believe it or not. This episode is, of course, coming from Brooklyn. We're not in the studio at the moment, but okay, let me just tell you the story about this episode, actually. Many years ago, when I started Film Wax Radio, you know, I was thinking, who would be my dream guest? And I was standing on a subway platform. I remember this distinctly on Flatbush, waiting to get on the D train. And I'm standing on the platform, and I'm thinking, of course, let me start with some Brooklyn folks because I'm living in Brooklyn, and you know that's who I should start with. So, and I put at the very top of my list John Turturro. No kidding. And the train pulls in, and I step on the train, and there is standing in the car. The same car I got on the same train, out of all the trains in all of New York and all the world, he walked into mine. And there he was, John Turturro, right there, only moments, literally, after I wrote him at the top of my wish list. Sharing the top of the list probably at the time was also Steve Buscemi and Spike Lee, you know, people that were all about indie film and living in Brooklyn or had a Brooklyn association. But I couldn't believe the coincidence. And he was reading what looked like a screenplay, and I thought, you know, if I interrupt him, I'm just going to be an asshole. Well, my stop was approaching, and I thought, you know, it's now or never. So I said, excuse me, I'm sorry, Mr. Turturro. And, you know, I could tell already before he even made eye contact that he was a bit bothered. You know, who can blame him? This is, you know, God knows, is always, I'm sure, being recognized and, you know, his attention is constantly sought. So I understood that. So I do what I do best, which is to kind of insinuate myself into his purview. And I said, I apologize. I know you probably want to just read your screenplay. And he kind of said, yeah. And I, ooh, that's smart. Ooh. But I proceeded. I said, look, you know, I apologize, but I just had to say, you know, I do this podcast and it's about independent film and you are, you know, you need to be on the show. And he goes, so, you know, and he kind of came back after a minute. He goes, tell me about what is the show? And I explained it. And he said, okay, listen, I'll put you in touch with my assistant. And I gave him my card, and that was the end of that. And that was several years ago. Okay, flash forward to about 6 months ago, six months ago. I can't even remember exactly. And I see he's in a new film called Mia Madre, which is, by the way, as you listen to this, already available on demand. I think it's coming into a select number of theaters starting Friday. 26th of August. Mia Madre in select theaters Friday, August 26th. It's going to be at the Angelica Film Center here in New York City, also at the Lincoln Plaza Cinema, and in Los Angeles at the Lemley Royal Theater. So go check out this Nanny Moretti's latest film starring John Turturro. Well, I had the opportunity to talk to John Turturro, finally sit down with John Turturro. So we did, and you know, it's something I say to a select few guests. I'm like, you know, listen, I've wanted you on the show. I kind of reminded him of our meeting. It may even be on this episode. It may even be on the interview. I said, you know, this is it. You're like one of the people that when I started this thing, you were on my, you know, my wish list. And he was very, I think, pleased to hear that. And, well, you know, the conversation was terrific. At the end of the conversation, I said to him, this is, again, a few months ago, look, I'm curating a series at SVA, a film series, and I would love to invite you to show one of your films, because, you know, he's directed a number of films as well. And he said, okay, let's make sure if the dates work out, but that sounds perfectly great. And, you know, my son graduated from SVA, and so that, I think, was the thing that kind of... you know, snatch the deal, as it were. And so he did, and we set up a date a couple of months later, and John Turturro came, and we, in fact, showed Romance and Cigarettes, which starred James Gandolfini and Steve Buscemi and a wonderful cast, Susan Sarandon and Christopher Walken, and on and on and on and on. It's a great film. You got to see it if you haven't seen it. It's a musical. You got to check it out. We showed it to a crowd there, and we had a great time. We did a Q&A. And so I'm pleased that my relationship with this terrific actor, who's been in so many seminal films, you know, has worked out to be such a nice situation here. So we're going to play that conversation about film and about, you know, this new movie he's in called Mia Madre, which is, again, opening up Friday, the 26th of August. And which is probably today for most people listening, or when this gets onto your radar. So that's the deal. Now, in addition to that, I want to say that we are also going to have a conversation with another film that I'm very, very keen on, and that is called White Girl. And, you know, I'll talk a little bit more about White Girl in its intro just in a little bit, but... But I can let you know that I talked to the director, Elizabeth Wood, and the cinematographer, Michael Simmons, and it was a great conversation. The film opens in New York, I believe on September the 2nd, and in L.A. on the 9th. We will discuss the very specifics of that during the conversation, but we'll get back to that in just a little bit. First, though, you know, John Turturro. I'm trying to remember the first time I saw John Turturro, and it goes back so far. I mean, I think he's an actor who I saw a bunch of times in small roles in a number of films before I knew who he was. So I had seen him in Raging Bull and in The Flamingo Kid, and I saw him in Desperately Seeking Susan and The Color of Money and Hannah and Her Sisters. You know, I saw him in, he's been so, you know, okay, I think I'm looking through the IMDb list here, and I think I've discovered the film that I probably first came upon John Turturro, and that will be 1989, Do the Right Thing. And then he appeared in State of Grace the following year, as well as Miller's Crossing. Well, he did like four or five movies in 1990 alone, including Mo Better Blues for Spike. In 91, he made Barton Fink and Jungle Fever, again for Spike and the Coens. And then he made Mac in 92. That one he directed. That was his first, I think that was his directorial debut. And then that kind of pushed him into more mainstream films. He made Fearless in 93, which starred Jeff Bridges, but Turturro played a smaller supporting role in that. He went on to do Clockers for Spike in 95. You know, I don't even know why I'm going through this because it's such a long list, but I'm just going to say the movies that mean a lot to me. Grace of My Heart, Allison Anders' film, 96. I love that film. I think it was executive produced by Martin Scorsese, who it's the star of Grace of My Heart. Ileana Douglas was involved with at the time. He's worked with a number of directors that have been on this podcast, and... you know, he's worked a lot with Spike for many years, so I guess it's slowed down more recently, but wow. He went on to do Rounders, he directed Illuminata, went on to make The Big Lebowski in 98, very memorable role. Summer of Sam in 1999. What else? Jesus Christ. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou in 2000 with Tim Blake Nelson, who has been on this podcast, and George Clooney. for the Coen brothers, of course. You know, he kind of would weave between bigger budget Hollywood studio films and indie films. What a great list. What a great filmmaker and great actor he is. So let's get right now into that. My conversation with the one and the only Brooklyn's own John Turturro. Vermont College of Fine Arts MFA in Film offers a two-year student design project-driven graduate program of professional mentorships for your scripts, fiction, and nonfiction filmmaking and transmedia projects. Each semester begins with an on-campus residency week of screenings, workshop lectures, and crits, along with the preparation of an independent study plan of your own personal projects. Then, students and faculty return home to work independently and meet monthly via Skype as projects unfold. The MFA program is designed to fit into the life you have and the films you make. Exciting, affordable, and intense. Refine your creative vision as you develop intensely personal stories in an independent practice. Visit vcfa.edu/film for more details.
Grande regista, grande. Grande, 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 eh? Sensibilità.
Margherita, fai qualcosa di nuovo, di diverso. Dai, rompi almeno un tuo schema. Uno su 200.
Rossellini, Antonioni, Petri, Fellini, la roba dei Fadini!
Ecco, ricordati però che tu devi sì interpretare il personaggio, però devi anche stargli accanto al personaggio, capito?
C'è Margherita?
Sì, sì, io sono Olivia, la figlia.
Poverina.
Dativo di possesso.
Il dativo di possesso.
Non so come me ne sono ricordato all'improvviso. I'm gonna do that. But then you have to spend the whole year watching movies, you know, the whole thing. But I never feel like, I don't mind to do the nomination things, like to send in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't like voting, honestly.
No.
I find it very depressing. Because I feel like, okay, you did a good job, you did a good job, someone else did. It's like apples and oranges. It's not like a sporting event. A sporting event, like, he scored 25, he scored 24.
But vote for me, yeah. Just for the record, please.
So
for your consideration, yeah. Vote for me.
Yeah, it gets a little crazy.
Yeah, there's...
I don't think it's... Whereas if it's like a film festival, at least it's there and it's
okay.
It's there and it's over.
We should start an award show, which is the award for those who fucked up the least.
Yeah.
That could be a new way of focusing on it. Like if you, what's that?
Author.
Oh, yeah. Sort of. We'll see. I mean, though, if you're the anonymous person in the room.
Okay. All right. We'll get started.
Yeah.
We're doing these things early because I may not be available later.
She said.
So
No, appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you. My name's Adam, by the way.
Hi, Adam.
Nice to meet you, John.
Hi.
Thank you for doing this early or at all. But I was standing on a platform in Brooklyn on Park Slope waiting for the platform, and I had a few minutes, and I had just started this thing, and I said, who's my wish list? And I put your name down at the very top. I'm not exaggerating. And a few other folks, you know, like at the time, who I thought, Brooklyn, New York people. And I stepped onto the train, and you were standing there. So 5 years later, you were very nice, by the way, because you were reading a script.
Oh, and I do sometimes read scripts. It's a long train ride.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you can get a lot done on a long train ride. I know.
I meet a lot of people on a train.
Yeah, that's always the thing. That was what I was wrestling with. First of all, interrupting, and then also that factor. It just never can go that well. You know, you can never really. All you can hope for is maybe just a tiny little connection, but usually it's not optimal, right? So,
well, it's kind of now with the cameras and the phones.
Oh yeah,
that's a big problem.
Yeah, I was talking to another
people. Sometimes are less. So I just try to bury my face in a
script or newspaper.
Newspaper.
He was saying how, like, there was karaoke at this festival where I met him, and he couldn't do it.
Right.
He said he would like to. He'd make a fool of himself. He doesn't mind if there's 20 people in the room. But now there's thousands and thousands of people in the room.
Right.
So you can't. You have to be kind of always aware.
Be careful, and people are. Yeah, they'll film you, and yeah. So it's just modern life. It's different.
Yeah. So we're actually meeting a couple months before the release of Mia Madre,
which is Nanny Moretti's latest
right.
film.
It comes out March 25th.
March 25th.
Right.
So, and this will get posted
okay.
probably like a day or two before that.
Fine.
You know, so people can go see it. And I guess this film, you're playing an actor, an American actor who comes to act in this film, this Italian film.
Right.
To ask maybe a very common question is how this particular project came about. Obviously, you knew Nanny Moretti, his films.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of world cinema and European cinema, and I've worked in Italy. I worked with the great Italian director Francesco Rosi many years ago. I did the Truce, which was called La Tregua, where the truce here, Primo Levi's second book.
Yeah.
About his return from Auschwitz home. It took him about, I think, 10 months. So it's that story. And I've worked, because of Rosie, I worked in the theater in Italy. I also directed, and I worked in Naples. And then I did Passione, which was a
right.
musical documentary.
I remember that.
And so Nani has met me. He has a movie theater that shows foreign language films, you know, in the original language with subtitles, which they don't have a lot of theaters.
Would that include American films?
Yeah, American films.
So foreign.
Usually independent films.
Right.
And my first film played there, and I met Nani then.
First one you directed, Mac?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I met him when I did Illuminata. We were both in the competition.
Yeah.
He was with April, and I was with Illuminata. And so we've become friendly and talked over the years maybe about doing something. And I think he likes me, and he knows that I'm interested in the culture there. And when he sent me the script, I was very impressed with it and how well observed. And I felt it was really moving to me, the story. I understood my character, sort of the comic relief, but the story about
yes
a woman.
No.
Yes and no.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. At first, maybe.
Yes.
And then
first,
you learn
right.
more about.
Then you learn about how.
It's not so funny.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I just liked what it was about. Like,
yeah.
You know, the central character, the age she was at,
yeah.
the middle of her life, being a director, being a mother, being a daughter, being a husband or an ex-wife, you know, having to deal with all these things. It resonated with me when I read it. You really see three generations of women in a film so well rendered. And also the idea of these people who are directors and actors wanting to be, you know, have a big effect on everyone. And then the woman's mother you see, who's this Latin teacher, mm-hmm. she's the one who has a big effect on her granddaughter, on her students.
On her students,
yeah.
Right,
and
right.
I think there was just something like wonderfully yeah. wise about that, you know, and how people can get lost very easily, especially as you get older, you know, when you're juggling all the demands of life. And I thought it was really a very human
it was.
Story, whether she was a director or an editor
right.
or, you know, a radio host or whatever she was.
Yeah.
And then I liked the part, and then I've witnessed a lot of actors who are, you know, not prepared and afraid and act crazy, and they're lost and they've been married three times. And I thought, well, this is good. So then Nani and I talked about it, and then I made a few suggestions, which he incorporated. And then I, you know, learned my lines in Italian. And then when I showed up, he kept thinking that maybe my Italian was now too good. And so he said, go back to English and do English and Italian. And mm-hmm. then he asked me to improvise and in two languages. That was very challenging. And but I had a really very creative experience with him. He shoots a really long time,
does lots
of takes.
Yeah.
He's very demanding. If you throw something out there that he likes, then he says, okay, do that.
Sure.
And then you have to remember what you did. And if you did a lot of new things, you have to remember what you did, because the script supervisor didn't speak English. So I was like, well, she's not going to help me. So
you're kind of on your own.
On your own,
to some
there.
Degree.
Yeah. So it was a really, you know, I liked with the movie, and I liked working with Margarita very much. And
she played the
director. Right, Margarita Bui.
I was wondering about the pronunciation, because I can butcher a language or two.
Yeah. And Giulia Lazzarini is the... the woman who plays the mom. And she's a big theater actress.
Oh, she is.
There. Yeah. Yeah. From
the, she's lovely. Yeah. And I like the connection between, in a way, the film and real life, because they're making this film about protest.
They're fighting for better wages.
Yes,
to, you
of
know,
course.
But right. they're cutting everything down, sort of. You know.
Right, right, right. That's right. Also, I mean, I know you established that you have a friendship with Nanni Moretti. Is there also an appeal about making a film like this? There's a number of things that come to mind when I ask such a question. For instance, since we're sitting in the office of ICM, does your agent and, you know, are they, do they?
It's complicated.
It's complicated.
Because you don't get paid as much money. You also
therefore,
have
they
to
don't.
Be, you have
now,
to be, there's also, you have to work out the tax situation, because you either have to pay taxes here or, you know, or there. You need a tax indemnity. But I've worked in Europe a lot, and my agent.
You know, that's part of the package.
Yeah, they, I've worked in Europe a lot, and I like to work all over if I can. I like to work with good people, and so be it. And that's
what you can
yeah,
do.
And that's really had a big effect on me as a person, I think.
Sure.
Even as a creative person, but also as a human being. I like movies about different cultures. I like, and I also like movies that don't necessarily have to be violence driven. I like movies with action too, but I think there's just so much of it in the world that, you know, when it's distilled in a story, that's okay for me. You know, if it's a story about, you know, a tragic situation or, but it's, I really feel like there's just so much in it, in the world.
Right.
That it's nice to do a different kind of story too.
Absolutely.
So I look for that.
You know, Bertolucci was on this podcast.
Oh, really? Well, he's... there's a great director. I mean, that's someone I have not had a chance to work with. I've met him a few times, but
wow, that's pretty good.
Wow,
yeah. No, I was real because I was real as a
Bernardo.
Yeah. That was very well. It was over Skype, but you know, I was hoping maybe
right.
next time to get out to Italy. But he was kind of coming back from he's had been fighting some health issues.
Yes, he has been.
And he wanted to make this small film. How do you say you and I? You and me.
You and me.
Anyway, so, but it was for night.
You et tu?
Yeah, you too. Something like that.
Yeah.
I'm digressing, but it just reminded me of that. Europeans are still making small films or character-driven films or a little bit more, you know, obviously they're
well,
not
it's,
making,
I mean,
not,
they've always
no
made movies, you know, like, you know, as far as like they're much more relaxed, you know, sexually, a lot of their movies, because they're not driven as much by the gun, you know, as movies here. But, you know, movies are movies. And, you know, you talk to someone like Scorsese, for example, who's such a great advocate of, you know, foreign cinema and supporter of world cinema. You know, he's the one who turned me on to Francesco Rosi, because when Francesco Rosi wanted to meet me, and, you know, he's the one who showed me a lot of different films, and he's been influenced by those movies.
Sure.
And when you see them, you learn a lot about, you know, who you are too, and the culture maybe that you came from or whatever. So, you know, a good movie is a good movie. It doesn't matter what language it's in.
Absolutely.
It's when people say, oh, it's the best this and the best that, I mean, that's subjective, you know, it's somebody's opinion, but, you know, when something you're affected by it, you're affected by it, whether it's Spotlight or Son of Saul, you know, or Mustang or whatever, these movies.
All great movies.
Year. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are all terrific.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, as you were talking about going to Italy there, the culture, you're really out of this whole studio frame of mind. You're really out of the whole big budget, the star system, all those things you're now in, because they don't have any of that. I mean, there's a star system in Italy.
Right.
But it's...
Right.
You know, there's no big, I mean, I guess there's...
But he's closer to independent films.
Cinecittà, how do you pronounce it?
Yeah, Cinecittà. But they do big American movies there, too.
Yeah.
But it's, that they don't have the same system that we have. They have actors who work all the time. They work a lot in a lot of movies. But, you know, here when you do independent movies, it's closer to it than that, you know. But, yes, you know, here, you know, when you do make a movie, they always want you to use the same... You know, five actors or actresses or 10, you know, and sometimes they may not be the perfect person. you know, for it. So
right. Once you're getting over that budget line, now
that
all
once
of a sudden,
you have a little breathing room, then they.
So it's easy to make the smaller film real much, much smaller, because then you don't.
It's harder and harder to do that. I mean, when I made my first movie, Mac, years ago, you know, I had almost 9 weeks to shoot it. I had a couple million dollars, and I was the only name besides Ellen Barkin. John Ames was 1992.
Yeah, so she'd been around.
But other leads, Michael Badalucco, Carl Capitato, Kathy Borowitz, they were all
relative unknowns.
They're unknown.
Sure, in the film world especially. I mean, like Michael might have been doing TV by then.
Not that much. No, okay. It was after that. And so we were able to, I was able to do that movie. It was Larry Estes, this guy who really, you know, he helped support tons of independent film. He was like the guy who gave, you know, money to people, you know, with his little, it was Columbia TriStar Home Video thing. And he's the one who, like, almost single-handedly, you know, financed a lot of these movies. So it's harder. It's harder to do it.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you want to have the right people.
Yeah.
So.
For sure. Right. Yeah, I can understand the frustrations or the challenges, let's
say. Yeah.
Does you still live in Brooklyn?
I live in Park Slope.
You do? Still? Yeah. That's good. So I guess you're still
right. It's a great neighborhood. So now it's, you know.
Yeah.
A very swanky neighborhood.
Well, Brooklyn is swanky.
Yeah, now Brooklyn is very,
headlines?
Very hip. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen, I mean, obviously a few blocks away over
at Barclays. My son goes there. Yeah. I'm a Knicks sufferer.
Okay.
Or a fan. Yeah. No, but they're doing pretty well this year.
Your children are grown.
One son works for DC Comics.
Oh, he does?
Out in Los Angeles.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And my other son is in school, and he's a freshman.
It's funny. When my dad was working in magazine publishing, they built their company for a long time was in the Warner Brothers building in Midtown, you know, right by Rockefeller Center, and they shared the floor with DC Comics.
Right.
And for years, when I was a kid, he would bring home like a batch of DC Comics.
Right.
So now I have a son who's huge into that.
Yeah. Well, my son worked in Midtown. I don't know if it was the same building, but then they relocated.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
They relocated.
Yeah. So Mia Madre is the name of the film. It's coming out March 25th. I'm sure theatrically in New York City most likely LA.
It'll be a bunch of theaters across the country.
Oh, very good. Yeah. And do you know about any? It's going to be on digital platforms yet?
I don't know about that. You'd have to ask other people at Alchemy. They'll give you all that information.
I've got a couple months.
It's come out in Italy and very well. It did really, really well in France.
And
it's been sold all over the world. So
it's fantastic. Yeah, he's really an amazing filmmaker. This guy, I've seen a number of his films.
Yeah.
He started, of course, with Caro Diario, which certainly put him on the map in this country. But and then you know the son's Room and what was the more recent one?
Habeas Popum. You mean about the Pope?
The Pope.
Yeah,
we have a Pope.
We have a Pope.
That was was very entertaining.
Yeah.
And are you planning on directing?
I'm hoping to do another film pretty soon. I'm just in the middle of casting and stuff.
So you are.
Hopefully, if it works out.
Do you have an Amazon series? I have to ask.
An HBO mini series.
Okay, that's all right.
Coming out in the summer or the fall that Steve Zalian wrote. Co-wrote with Richard Price, and Steve directed it. And
a lot of pedigree there.
Yeah, it's a really good piece, and it's called right now. It's called Crime. It's about one crime.
Okay.
And I have a terrific role, and there's a lot of wonderful actors in the piece, I'm excited about that. That was a really long, you know.
Yeah. And that's going to be on HBO later in the year, I guess.
Yeah, later in the year.
And then what was do you have anything you can say about the film?
And the film I'm doing is an adaptation of an old French movie from the 70s and book.
Oh, which one? Oh, you don't want to say.
It's Bertrand Blier's Going Places.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't remember that.
Yeah. It was called Les Valseuses.
Okay. I've seen a lot of obscure films from the 70s.
You can look it up.
I will.
Pauline Kael wrote about it a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. She was a big a fan of the movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just finally.
But it's a reimagining of that.
I lost it at the movies. I think I just read.
Yeah.
So I'm not putting you on the spot at all.
Right.
I wouldn't do that. I've learned. My last on the subway, but I've been solicited by SVA, the School of Visual Arts.
Right,
you know it,
right? Yeah, my son went there.
Oh, he did.
He graduated.
Oh, well, yeah. Maybe he'll do it instead. But no, the DC comic book guy.
Right.
No, they're asking me to put together some classes, which are really like a screening with a Q&A. But the Q&A is really more for students to be able to get like a mini master class, I guess.
Right,
you could
say. Right.
And they've asked me, so it's ongoing.
Right.
So it could be at some later time, but I was thinking, may as well ask. We could show Mac, for instance, and you could talk to the...
Sure. Yeah, I have. You can just ask Emily, and she can email you. And then I'll just give me, throw out a bunch of dates, and I'll tell you.
All right, that's all.
That's great. I have a DVD of Mac. I do have a print of Mac, I think.
I'm sure they have everything over there.
But I have other movies I directed too.
Oh, that's true. Illumina. Whichever one I think would be really cool to talk about that.
I have a DCP of the last one too. The one with Woody.
Right.
And Romance and Cigarettes, I have.
Oh, right. Yeah, There's so much.
Romance and Cigarettes would be an interesting one.
That could be, maybe that one. I would just say choose whichever one, of course. Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna...
Maybe that one.
Yeah.
Because that didn't, you know, we lost our distributor, so we...
Did the rights...
No, we had United Artists, and then we lost it because they got bought. And
right.
So it was a really hard movie to get back to release. But I eventually did. I did, and we had a nice little life with it, but not the life that we were all set to, to experience, because they were going to do a real kind of big release with it, and then they got bought.
Oh, that's always the thing. Yeah, there's so much transition in the industry.
Yeah, so it was a really big, because it's not maybe perfect movie, but there's a movie when people see it, they people.
It's like, got an incredible cast.
Yeah, and people love the movie
too.
It's got a lot of life to it. So, yeah, maybe that one.
Oh, okay. I would love that. Anyway, I'll give you, the dates, and I'll send them over to Mia. And then the last thing is, which is just say something along the lines of, if you don't mind, prostitute yourself for a second, just to say something like, this is John Turturro, and you're listening to Film Wax Radio, which is the name of the show.
Film Wax?
Yeah, here it is. This is the name of the show. So you just...
Okay, ready?
You could say whatever you want to say, but I can play it once in a while.
This is John Turturro, and you're listening to Film Wax Radio.
That's good. You're hired.
All right.
Yeah. You did get a chance to see it. You saw Spotlight, I assume.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of good movies this year.
This year there seems to be quite a few.
Yeah, there's a lot of good movies.
You know?
Strong movies in different ways. You know, it's like hard to decide, like, well, I like this movie this way and this way and that way. So... Uh-huh. But I thought it's been a good year.
A strong
yes.
You mentioned Son of Saul, which is like something I haven't. But there's a Spirit Award screening coming up next weekend.
It's a strong movie.
I think I'm really
really strong movie.
Go see that when you're don't feel.
Send Miller the Day is better. That's my advice.
Don't go to bed on Son of Saul.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any others you can recommend?
I've liked The Revenant. Was very strong.
Yeah.
I liked. The Big Short. I liked Diary of a Teenage Girl.
Oh, Teenage Girl. That was really, really that was also...
I thought that was really, really,
I know.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
And I thought the girl was fantastic.
The young British girl. Carol. Yeah, oh, yeah. I just talked to Todd Haynes.
I'm a big fan of Todd Haynes.
Me too.
I really like Todd Haynes a lot.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of his for a long time. I've
gone...
Never worked with him because probably he doesn't have a role for me. But I'd love to. I loved Far From Heaven.
Have you worked with Christine Vachon?
Actually, we know each other. We almost worked on something together, but no, we've never done a film yet.
Yeah.
Yet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You've got many, many years. Well, listen.
Okay.
This was perfect, and
thank
I'm
you.
So thrilled to.
Okay. Well, let me know about the SVA.
I appreciate that. Okay. Thanks very much, John.
Thank you.
For you, the listeners of Film Wax Radio, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Now, I take a lot of car rides myself, long car rides on the weekends or to work, and I have become very, very addicted to Audible myself. Two titles, for instance, that I recently downloaded was Roger Corman, a prior guest of the show, what's called Roger Corman, Blood-Sucking Vampires, Flesh-Eating Cockroaches, and Driller Killers by Beverly Gray. And also a former guest, William Friedkin. He has his memoir called The Friedkin Connection, two great titles. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/filmwaxradio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/filmwaxradio for your free audiobook. My friend Michael Taylor is an editor. He's been on this show. And he has edited a number of films I've discussed in this podcast, and this is one more coming up right now, White Girl. This is a stunning film about a young woman who moves to Brooklyn. No, I think it's Queens. I'm not sure if what it's supposed to... I mean, it's shot in a neighborhood that is right on the cusp, and I'm not sure if it's supposed to take place. I guess it really doesn't matter. But she's moved to New York, and she's sharing an apartment with her girlfriend, and she is got a job in some, media company of some sort. And anyway, she is just on the fast track to trouble. She is all id, all about just following her gut, and she doesn't think about things too much. And the film has got a great cast. My friend Ralph Rodriguez is in it. My friend Adrian Martinez is in it. The actor Chris Knopf, Mr. Big himself, is in it. Introduces a number of young actors to it. But in its center is this wonderful actress named Morgan Saylor, who will shock you in her incredibly, I would say, unbridled, unselfconscious, liberated performance as this really, really somewhat self-destructive woman, but young lady. But I was very impressed with it. And it's a very, very sexy, at times shocking film, which says a lot in this day and age. Elizabeth Wood, I was introduced. Michael Taylor, who edited the film, that's why I brought him up, I'm sorry. He edited the film, and Michael and I went to see Taxi Driver at the Tribeca Film Festival this past spring, where it was having its 40th anniversary, with the Tribeca Film Festival. And there was a reunion with the original cast and crew, and we sat actually just, I think, right next to Elizabeth and her husband. We went out for drinks afterwards, and so the film sounded great, and it was on my radar. And finally, I went to Rooftop Films to see it a few weeks ago, and made a point then to make sure I got Elizabeth on the podcast. She brought her DP, her cinematographer, Michael Simmons, with her. I did not have a lot of time to prepare, so I didn't realize Michael Simmons is like Rahman Barani's guy. He's shot a number of Barani's films, and Barani is another guy who I'm trying to get on the podcast. The news is I got Barani's email address from Michael and emailed Barani again, and Barani got right back to me and said he would do the podcast. Would I please just sort of hold on until the next project? Of course, I'll do whatever he wants me to. I wrote back. I said, I'd rather just get you on between projects, but of course, whatever you want, I'll do. I'm going to get this guy on the show. That's that. So what you're going to hear now is my conversation with Elizabeth Wood, who is the director, and her cinematographer, Michael Simmons. And I hope you enjoy this conversation. Please go out, make a point of seeing White Girl. It's going to be in theaters next week in New York, and then the following week in L.A., and then after that, as September goes on, in more theaters around the country. So here's White Girl director Elizabeth Wood and Michael Simmons, the cinematographer.
Friend Leah, she just moved up the block. She's in college over here.
Hi.
So nice to meet you.
We're going to go inside, okay? Don't
worry. So, how much is this?
That's a 20 bag right there.
This?
Mm-hmm.
This could be like 60.
That's a 20 bag right there.
You know what? You should come to a party with me tonight in Chinatown. You could sell all this shit.
No, I don't fuck around over there.
What, in Chinatown?
No, like in the city. I don't fuck around over there.
What do you mean you don't fuck around in the city? Come on, it'll be fun.
We're here with a white girl, creative team, at least part of it.
The most creative part of it.
Well, Michael Taylor isn't here, so.
Oh, well, of
and
course.
He is a mutual friend of ours.
He is the most creative part of it, but mm-hmm. We're the rest of it.
Well, Michael would be here. He's in Los Angeles at the moment.
He's
soaking
the
it
best
all
human. There's no one else I could be like locked in a room with for 2 months.
A little closer.
It was snowing. Mm-hmm. We drank the whole time. It's great.
Wait, where was this?
When we edited.
When you were editing.
Yeah, we were upstairs on the fourth floor, and it was snowy winter, and we went to like 2-hour lunches every day and mm-hmm. like had bottles of wine. It was great.
Oh, it sounds perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he is a lovely man. We're talking to Elizabeth Wood, director, by the way. Now, we met. Well, I was on a date with Michael. A bro date? A man date? A man date.
Tell the truth. You guys made out. I saw you.
Sure, but what's your point? You know what happened is we're talking about we met after the screening of Taxi Driver at the Tribeca Film Festival. And it was the 40th anniversary screening and reunion, right? And
it was such a cool
Michael,
discussion.
It was. And what happened was, when Tribeca posted this information, I have a badge, and I looked at the pricing for the tickets, and I just made a moral stand. I'm like, this festival is so elitist. You know, they price these things to make them unaffordable to average people who may want to come to such an event. They can't afford to. So I'm making a stand, and I'm not going as a point of principle. And then Michael Taylor said that Judy wasn't going. Would I like to go? Yes, I'll go. So I wouldn't want you to be alone.
It was expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we sat in the nose, not nosebleeds,
I was
but
next
in the
to you.
Balcony. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But to me, seeing the discussion was what made it worth it.
Mm-hmm. You're one of these people that, Michael does the same thing.
Oh, sorry.
Here for some reason.
It was the discussion that made it worth it.
I agree. Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could have just been the movie, but like, it was who all was there? It was,
I don't think I ever saw, Harvey Keitel, which was a nice surprise. Sybil.
Shepard,
Jodie Foster, Scorsese, Michael Phillips, who is a producer.
The writer, what's his name?
Paul Schrader.
He was one of my professors.
Is that right?
He gave me, I flunked a test. I flunked his test. I got an F.
Well, what did you see any of his last films? Because they would get an F
too. Lindsay Lohan movie?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was really good. Did you see that? You probably liked it.
I did not see the Lindsay Lohan movie.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure Paul Schrader is grateful for anyone who refers to that movie as that, because less attention.
What was it called, like The Hills or like?
It was The Neighborhood in L.A. where, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Poor Lindsay.
The Canyons. That's right. Anyway, the point is that there's no point, but I kind
That's
of said already I just completely caved in and decided to go. We did have a great time. And it was well worth it. But when I was a kid, when that came out, I was too young to see it. Not that it prevented me from seeing other movies that were inappropriate, but the point is that I think that's the first time I've seen Taxi Driver on a big screen. So I was grateful for that too.
Yeah, I never.
Although I may be wrong, because when I was a kid in New York, there were a lot of repertory cinemas here, a lot of revival houses. So there's a good chance I saw it in a movie theater, like in Times Square, where my feet were stuck to the floor. There were a lot of these creepy, disgusting theaters around Times Square.
Oh, man,
like
I
on
wish
top
we
of
could
peep
screen
shows.
At a movie like that. Movie theater
Yeah,
like that.
Those days are over.
Now they're all like airplane seats.
Your movie
would work well in that kind of environment. You're right. It's like kind of...
like people masturbating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sadly.
Like smoking out in the open. So I'm so great. We have VOD now. Anyone can masturbate and smoke while watching White Girl.
Well, I was... now that you mention it, I did find myself kind of aroused at one point in the movie. And I'm like, that's odd. I don't...
Really? It's odd to be aroused? Or
I was outside when I saw it in with this huge, big crowd of people on a rooftop of all things. And I'm finding like, oh, I'm getting a little turned on by this movie. There's a couple of early sex scenes. The scene that I'm referring to is the one that's in the first scene, a graphic scene, where she's in this sleazy boss's office.
Oh, nice. That's a good one.
You don't know he's sleazy yet. I mean, yes, you do. Yes,
you just have to look at him to know.
Yeah, no, he's sleazy, yeah. So that's not a spoiler, by the way. It's part of the fabric of the film, this type
Simmons
of
really helped make sure we saw a little bit of, like, the base of the dick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry.
No, what?
Am I being bad?
No. Go ahead, Mike. Mike Simmons is the director of photography of White Girl.
Yeah, I mean, there's a close-up of her eyes to mouth sucking his dick.
Yeah, we were like, make sure you can see the shaft a little bit, right?
Yeah, you got to give a little peep.
A little shaft. Like, shaft cam going on there?
Yeah.
Wait, talk into the mic, whoever's talking.
I thought that was one of the better shots in the movie.
Yeah. Hold on.
You explained that why you think that was one of the better shots of the movie.
I thought that shot is so explicit, but I was inspired by a shot from Shame. That movie Shame.
Oh, that's the Michael Fassbender, Steve McQueen. Steve McQueen film.
Boring.
Yeah, but where he's the final scene where he's sleeping with those two ladies of the night, and then there's a close up of his face that just looks insane. And that's what I was thinking about.
I remember seeing that at the New York Film Festival, Shame, at a press screening. But you could hear audible gasps in the audience.
Gasp?
At the beginning when he's like walking around his apartment naked, and there are people like, I knew he was that big.
Really?
Mm.
I forgot. Yeah, must have not.
It's been a long time.
Affected me if I can't remember it. I usually remember that kind of thing, but I think he makes beautiful films that are
Steve
like
McQueen.
Talking photographs, but they're not like movies. They're like each scene is like. Is it bad to say rude things about other people?
No.
God forbid I meet him.
I'm trying to get him on the podcast, but
oh, you are.
But that's okay. Of course, I love his.
Beautiful films, but to me, like somewhat static.
Right. Okay. Do you think they're
I'm easily bored. I think maybe I have ADHD, which is like I can't pay attention to like smart, boring, artsy films. I'm like, yeah, I just want to masturbate and smoke, you know?
White Girl is definitely a product of somebody with potentially with ADHD. It's not that you feel like you're watching one of these action films that are overcut and edited. Because of attention span and whatever, that's they feel like they constantly have to propel you visually and narratively. It's not like that. It sort of does take its time on some level. But yeah, I could see what you're saying. They're
like gorgeous. I'm like
she's on speed.
Some scenes are like great, and it's like.
Are you talking about Shame again?
Oh yeah, Shame.
Or Steve McQueen movies.
I'm trying to like rationalize my insult. Like there will be a scene that it's a short film, but like they're not necessarily an experience. Like they're not. It's not one experience overall. Mm-hmm. It's like many experiences rather than like one overall experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was the first one again? In the prison, it was Hunger. Thank you.
Actually, I haven't seen Hunger.
Well, go for a long run and then see it because you're gonna. It's definitely get it out of your system because it's there's some really long prolonged scenes.
Yeah.
There's like a 10-minute scene of a guy mopping.
Yeah, remember fuck that shit.
I remember there's a two-shot at the end of the movie that's like a 12-minute long take.
When he's talking to the priest?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a brilliant scene, though. I
love the movie, but I think that's actually like not one of the stronger parts of the film for me. Mm-hmm. I'm not into testing the audience's patience.
Do you think that's what he was attempting?
I don't think he thinks that way. I think he's an artist, and I think he's making bold choices and covering things the way he's inspired to cover them. But, I made a lot of films like that with Ramin Brani and stuff. But
oh, you worked with him?
Yeah, I shot a lot of his movies. And then
I'm a big fan of that. Yeah. I didn't know that. Why didn't I look this up? I didn't have time.
Chop Shop.
I love them. And then
Live by Soul.
Goodbye Solo. Wait a minute, and of course.
And the other one, of course.
No, the Man
Push
Cart.
You shot that?
You did?
Yeah.
You know, I just tried to email Brahman Barani because I've been trying to. We're Facebook friends, but he doesn't really go on Facebook, I guess, because. Yeah, he's like one of my top people I'm trying to get on the show. I've seen all of his films, including.
You see Plastic Bag? The short with Werner Herzog is the Plastic Bag.
You would remember, it's fucking amazing.
I don't think I have
that
seen
that. That was the most fun one.
Okay.
But I remember I was talking to a director earlier in the year before I shot White Girl, and we were talking about this Jonathan Demme article where he's like, making movies is the art of teasing the eyeball, mm-hmm. you know, and just making people interested from shot to shot and keeping them engaged. And that's kind of what I'm interested in filmmaking right now.
Mm-hmm. So I understand why Steve McQueen isn't representing where your mind is at. Not just criticize him, but I could see maybe why you'd be more excited about something.
I think everything else in Hunger is awesome. Mm-hmm. I just don't think a 12-minute static shot of two people. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't listen to what people are saying in movies.
Mm-hmm. Or in life.
In life. I really don't think I do. I think I was watching... I kind of watch movies now while I listen to podcasts.
Interesting. Literally, you're just caught up in a visual language, right? That's what you do, and maybe that's
read. Like, I don't know if you ever read our script.
I don't read the scripts very much.
No, nor did we make a plan.
What does Barani think of that?
I haven't worked with Rumin in probably 5 years, but we did a lot.
Because he's kind of doing bigger scale things now too.
Yeah, I start from.
He shot it.
I went from Man Push Cart to At Any Price. But the Ramin's very into script writing. But my relationship with each director is different. And but I'm super dyslexic, so I can barely read.
I see.
And I get
an excuse to not do your homework, Mike.
That's what my teachers have always said. And I don't read the scripts more than once. And then I read them out loud with the director.
Mm-hmm. Which helps them make sense, because he reads them in a way that's like a dyslexic person would read, that makes it... clear what the problems are in the scene. Like, Mike taught me and all of us, I feel like, this great method of let's read out loud what we're about to shoot or we're talking about, and it would become very clear what wasn't making sense in the staging or in the conflict. But, Ramin Barani is also how I got to Simmons, because Ramin Barani was a professor of mine. And Simmons,
along with Paul Schrader.
Yeah.
Where was this?
Columbia.
This is at Columbia. I thought so. I didn't think it was NYU.
Paul
Schrader, I some reason associate with Columbia. Not sure why.
Yeah.
Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I don't know. And Simmons came in and taught one class. And I swear I learned more about filmmaking in this one class that he came in than I did all of film school as a whole. I mean, that's probably exaggerating, not true at all, but I really liked him.
It's not true at all.
But I really liked him and thought, if I got to work with him one day, it'd be amazing. And then when I did get to work with him on my first film, because my first DP had a personal tragedy and had to drop out, and I got to you, it was like a dream come true.
Mm-hmm. Second place.
I know. Well, I'd already worked with the other one. I thought you were too good for me, Simmons.
Half the jobs I get are because someone got sick or fell out of, have that back out of the job.
Mm-hmm. But the good graces of... So who else have you worked with? It doesn't matter, big or small, because I know a lot of filmmakers. So.
My last project was... I did second season of Vice Principals with David Gordon Green.
Okay, yes, sure.
Before that, I did a film called Nerve with
I know it.
Henry and Rel.
I had them on.
Oh, okay, cool.
Which is odd, because I don't usually do... big things, but I want to.
And they're also executive producers of this film.
Right. I catfished them when I got there. If you listen to that episode, because I had this very lovely, but very young, a friend of mine. His daughter was interning for me this summer, and I brought her. And I said, when I was looking for an intern earlier this summer, I was looking for somebody more mature, who had experience, maybe somebody even closer to my age. I don't know. I was kind of bullshitting. And then I got somebody on Facebook responded, and they said they were a middle-aged person and they would like to be my intern. And then it was this girl, and she was lying about her identity. And they totally believed me. And I said, you just catfished. Not very funny, I guess. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's okay. I just tried to
follow,
I came up. No, but my whole
I bet it was really funny at the time.
It wasn't. sadly. But I was hoping maybe if I retold it in this context, the point is I tried to prank.
You pretended that you were catfish.
That I was catfish.
Well, I always wanted to do that, like try to get on their show.
They understood it though, and they fell for it. They go, "Oh, you had us completely." I'm like, you know, I was trying to.
That's, maybe you should consider a career in acting.
That's right. It was too convincing. Anyway, I'm sorry to keep getting. So it's quite a lot of different diverse group of filmmakers.
I try to mix it up as much as possible.
Try to mix it up.
I try never to do the same job twice in a row. So I mean, I did like Paranormal Activity Part 2, and I've done a lot of weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I did Project Nim, about the chimpanzee that thought he was human.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. So, like, that was raised by people, and then it got to maturity, and then it like became very hot, aggressive.
And then I'll like go. And then I did Lunchbox in India, this movie with Irfan Khan that people seemed to like. So, but coming to White Girl was fun. It was.
Where are you from, Michael?
I'm from Westchester, Scarsdale.
Oh, okay. So Henry and are those guys from there? Or?
No, those guys are city guys.
Okay, because it's funny. Ariel's aunt, is her. That's where she is.
Rel's mother
singer.
She's from Scarsdale.
And no, her other kids from a second marriage or whatever are friends of mine.
Oh, okay, cool.
You know, so I knew about, you know, when the Catfish first came out, they were like, we know these two young guys who just had a film at Sundance. And maybe you want to talk to them. And I said, yeah. Did you know this movie Catfish? I said, yes, I've heard about it. Because it was like all the talk at the time.
Yeah,
they're the best. They're awesome. And
they are very nice.
They also brought me onto this project.
Yeah.
But now I live up in Hudson, New York.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I stayed in their guest room while we shot White Girl.
Oh.
Right upstairs.
Where'd you shoot all of White Girl?
Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan.
Okay. So real, like Barani in a way, really using the city.
And like,
you know,
a lot
neighborhoods.
Of in Ridgewood where we were filming, where we filmed was actually on the block where the real life experience that the film was inspired by occurred.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cool to be like right there.
What do they say? Torn from today's headlines? No, not quite, but based on a real story.
Yeah.
It was a girl you knew or this? Well, first of all, let's recap a little bit of the synopsis so people know the context of what we're talking about. It's about a young girl who is somewhat out of control, I guess you could say. Not somewhat. She's out of control. And she's in a mode of rebellion. Rebellion. Correct? Would you say that? What's her name?
Leah.
Leah, of course. She falls for a drug dealer. And that's the first step. And she's also very indulgent. She doesn't really think about consequences. She just jumps into things head first. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's accurate.
Anyway, so it's a kind of takes place. How what's the time span of White Girl? Like a couple of, feels like it's a couple of days, but I may be wrong.
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe, you know, I mean, for the crux of the film.
Yeah,
you're not
like,
really
it's like
sure
quickly. It's all, you know.
There's sort of an epilogue, but yeah.
Yeah, like week. Something,
yeah.
I forget.
Yeah. So he gets thrown in jail at some point. I don't want to give away too much more, but I only bring that up because then there's the lawyer that comes into the story, played by Chris Noth, and what a great casting choice, by the way. I think
he's amazing.
He really is really good in this. It's nice to see him do something really different with almost, you know, it's almost as he's just on the cusp of letting you know he's in on the joke, but he doesn't. I mean, he plays it convincingly, but there's almost like it's almost like an Oliver Stone role. You know, it's like, and who else is in it? Then Adrian is in it. What's his last name again?
Martinez. Yeah.
Who is a recognizable sort of character actor, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
He's in a lot of stuff.
And,
he just waved you. And then Ralph Rodriguez is even a more minor character, but, although he's in a substantial number of the scenes.
He's the best friend of the lead, Brian Mark, who's, it was his first acting role, the boyfriend. And
he's really good.
Yeah. So
very
Ralph Rodriguez and Anthony Ramos are the best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, India Minwez is the lead character's girl best friend. It's a really great cast.
Mm-hmm. Are they roommates?
Yeah, roommates.
I'm wondering if I'm leaving anybody out.
Morgan.
Oh, yeah,
the star
Morgan
of the
Saylor.
Film. That she's in every moment of the film, just about, right?
Yeah.
It's quite a demanding role. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to speak to her yet. Maybe some point. But what did she make of this part? It demands so much of her in so many ways, you know.
Yeah, she took it so seriously. I mean, she is not at all like this character. She's a math student right now at University of Chicago. She literally made like mathematical equations and like graphs that when we were shooting out of order, she could go back to like where on this, like what are all the variables, where she was in her X and Y axis. I had no idea what it meant.
What were they?
I was like, great.
Was she trying to track the timeline, or was she emotional?
Journey. And how everything plays together. Mm. She had this like color system, and I was like, whatever you need.
That's how she thinks.
Yeah, she's very serious, very intelligent.
Yeah.
Playing someone totally wild. I was scared really wild to play something really wild, and that would have been like terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But she, thank God, she's serious.
No, totally. It's all the more impressive because it's all id with her, right? Is that the right way to put it? It's like it's all...
That sounds smart.
Well, she's cerebral, and yet she's not playing cerebral. I mean, it doesn't appear that way. I don't know how much goes into her preparation or what she's doing to prepare, but...
A lot. We rehearsed a lot, talked a lot. A lot of preparation.
So you're saying this person, in some semblance, really existed, and that this person... obviously the story follows her trying to raise money to get her boyfriend out. That's all we'll say about the rest is pure. Just see it. It's hard to explain.
Okay, great.
It's
care about this spoiler thing, right? Like,
right.
I wouldn't care if someone told me the entire plot.
Maybe
of the movie.
In this case, you're right though, Michael.
Maybe you can tell me the whole entire plot of Suicide Squad or anything. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like, what? Something happens.
Right. Well, there are some that where the
it end. Bothers me. I don't like to know.
Like, which films have you seen recently that...
I don't know. I don't really watch movies.
You just make them.
Well, like, I can't think of a movie that I've seen where someone has told me, but I know I don't like it. I don't know. I feel like this does kind of have a surprise ending. And, like, people keep writing up sometimes in, like, write-ups, some, like, of the things that happen with the Chris Noth character. It's in a lot of the articles, and I'm like, I feel like that ruins your experience watching it to know... how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
That's a true
I
twist.
Can't hear you. Sorry. No,
That's a twist, the Chris Noth thing. But that's minute 70 of the movie.
But then from there on, pretty much, it's kind of a series of surprises, you know, with many of the characters. So, yeah. Let's not ruin it for them.
Mm. Yeah, no, no.
Or
no.
We could. No.
No, as much as it's... it's easy to go by whatever's in your official description. I don't think I've gotten a press release yet, but... That's usually a good guideline. Whatever the marketing materials sort of as they describe in their synopsis, maybe you don't want to add more than that, you know, because that's kind of like we've decided what is we can divulge about the story, you know. Huh. So it's really well cast and exciting to watch. And it now says as many little neighborhoods as you shot this in. How was that? How did that go? Did you shoot a lot of things very late? So you could kind of control what happened on these streets. There's so many scenes on the streets, and
I don't really know.
Or New Yorkers just so they don't give a shit anymore, and they're just so used to seeing people.
You hate shooting at night, but I wanted to shoot the whole thing at night, ideally when because the film mostly takes place at night. And then I had a newborn when we were making the film, and it suddenly seemed like less appealing to shoot all night.
Yeah, I bet.
Although it's not like I was sleeping at home. It wouldn't have fucking mattered. I could have been shooting all night.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you do get really tired.
No, we're just trying to... I mean, the only thing that really matters in film production is time. Everyone thinks that there's shooting in sequence is important or all these other things, but...
But they don't.
They don't shoot sequence, but I mean, you'd have to be such a powerful filmmaker for it to happen.
Right,
but time is the most important, and you're just trying to utilize as much of it.
Yeah.
And then what Liz is saying, in the apartment, a lot of it's day for night. You know, we were kind of adjusting the windows, so we're filming those scenes during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And you only really want to shoot at night when you have to, when you're actually on the street.
Mm-hmm.
But most of it's shot in Ridgewood, and we shot there probably for 3 weeks, and then we floated around for a couple more days.
Yeah. Ridgewood, for those who don't know, is the next area beyond even Bushwick. If you're on the L train, I guess.
I think it's like 6 stops on the L train or something.
No, like 12.
Yeah, it's got to be a lot more than 6 because it's Queens.
I loved it, though. I thought I would move there if I still lived in the city.
You could move there. I bet they'd be happy to have you.
Yeah, there's only one bar, and I only need to go to
is
one.
Is that true?
Not true. There's bars everywhere. What are you talking about? Mike, you say you slept upstairs, but a lot of times Mike actually slept on set with the PAs. like on the prop bed on like piles of like thrift store props that hadn't been washed. And the PAs would like bring home girls and you'd just snore through it. And we'd come in the morning, there was like strange girls and like it smelled like weed and like we'd wake you up and start shooting again.
The life becomes, falls art in this case. Things were starting to get like your movie.
Yeah, but not on set. Surprisingly, like there's a lot of cocaine in the film, but we had this like substance called Incitol that everyone was snorting. Mm-hmm. And it's like a B vitamin mixture. I would say it's like the perfect drug for your 30s. It's not habit forming, gives you a little bit of energy, easily dissolvable, legal. And we all started doing it, like, mm-hmm. and the crew was doing it. And then some like day player on the crew saw this and thought that we were just like all doing like massive amounts of cocaine.
Hysterical.
Like meanwhile, I'm breastfeeding too, you know,
that's even funnier.
And they called like SAG. Then we had a SAG babysitter also for reporting like blowjob or something. But then the SAG babysitter kind of felt embarrassed. I think we offered them some too. They liked it and they like left.
Here's a spoiler. There is a putting blow on again this boss, the sleazy boss that we referred to earlier, on his dick and then snorting from his dick. Jesus. Anyway, well done. That wasn't one scene that didn't arouse me. But it was a good scene.
It's funny, right?
I thought of that, but I don't know.
I told my dad, like, there's one very strange sex act. Tell me.
If I've gone too far this time, Dad.
Yeah.
Wait, who is Dad? In terms of, like, you're being his daughter, is this stuff that he's completely assuming that his daughter, knowing you, is going to, this is the kind of film she's going to tell?
Like, a Church of Christ, Oklahoma family. I grew up
Thank
with...
you.
my family worked at, you know, a Christian university and, you know, missionaries, all that. So I don't know that, I mean, but then again, they're liberal, they're Democrats, they're very supportive of me.
They're in Oklahoma City?
They're in a small town in Texas.
Oh, okay. But still, it's Texas.
I tried to prime them. It was like a number of years. I'm like, Mom and Dad, there's a blowjob 7 minutes in, and then there's like 9 sex scenes averaging like 4 minutes apart. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to like really like prepare them.
Think of the conversation that Morgan was having with her. Although
I don't
she
think
made
she
a,
warned them.
No.
She just didn't tell them anything.
Maybe that's wise. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, I don't know what I would do, but I sometimes thank God I don't have a daughter.
It's just like a movie. Remember, it's just a movie.
It's make-believe.
And that actually helps. Like, in real life, maybe you couldn't get away with this behavior the same way. But it's funny how when things are movies, even conservative people somehow accept it or allow it because it's fiction.
So
your
parents were okay with it?
Yeah, they love movies.
Were they worried about their church?
I was worried about their church. Mm-hmm. Thank God they're moving out of their town because, God, I don't know what happened. Luckily, it probably won't play in Longview, Texas, but it will come out on Netflix, right?
It's going to come out on a lot of platforms, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be one of the – I think they're going to know that this is going to do well on.
I certainly hope so. I'm excited for people in places like mm-hmm. Longview, Texas, to see this, and not just like snobs in big cities. Who cares about them?
So you grew up in a Footloose.
Yeah, it was my religion. Dancing was wrong. The college I was supposed to go to, you had a 10 p.m. curfew. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have boys or girls opposite sex in your room. Of course, no homosexuality. If they found out you went out dancing, you'd be in trouble. And my dad was the person in charge of, like, discipline. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, Dad, I don't think I should go here. Like, it's not only going to be bad for, like, just me, but, like, you. And he's like, you're right. You want to go to New York?
Seriously. And so he signed off on, because I'm saying, so how do you get from there to the director of White Girl? Like, how does that exist? I understand the pushback against kind of growing up in you haven't said this, but I can imagine for some people that would be an oppressive way to grow up. It's on some level, well, on many levels possibly, but and then to come to New York and just see and be exposed to New York. You're still a very young woman, so I'm wondering how you now make that movie.
From
that background.
Sure, it probably, much of my behavior is like a reaction to like Christianity, and that's weird, but it's probably true. But I still consider myself very spiritual.
That's not something I wouldn't question.
But like, this behavior was not like, say, born in New York. It was very much growing up in Oklahoma was not like actually a very at all conservative experience for me. If anything, it was like the craziest time of my life. It's like kids
Okay.
In little towns all over the world, what they have to do to entertain themselves is so insane.
Yeah, right.
I mean, like, Oklahoma's like meth lab capital. I mean,
right.
You know, I went to a public school, you know, like I wasn't, I surely wasn't. Even so like,
we're living
I went to
in
church
a bubble.
Yeah. Two times a week, whatever, the rest of the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was free play.
Free base.
Yeah, free base. A little bit.
Well, it certainly is a, like I say, a highly entertaining movie. I saw it at Rooftop Films outside. It was fantastic. It was nobody knew what the weather was going to do. I love those nights, but even though Dan
still
pulls his hair out. Yeah, earlier that day, it was quite an exciting day, so I'm glad it worked out, and all your stars were there. Now, when is it coming out theatrically? October?
September 2nd in New York.
Right in a couple of days.
And then the 9th in L.A., and then the 16th. Other places that'll have it.
Yeah, and some of those other places may also depend on how well it does in New York and L.A. So,
yeah,
right?
Probably.
Like how many more, like what theater owners, theater chains might say, so let's put them into more rooms.
Go see my
movie. So it's important to see it. If you're in the New York or Los Angeles area, go see it. Well, I think it's going to do very well.
Oh, wait, I certainly hope so. Do people go see movies anymore?
Yes, they do. Well, they're. I keep saying this on every episode, so my listeners are going to be sick and tired of hearing me. But here in New York, although it's more in the art houses and then the more indie houses, which is perfect for you. Like IFC Center is building out an annex of new rooms. That's your neighbor. you've got, you know, the Metrograph just opened this.
That's my 2-year-old.
Oh, that's your 2-year-old.
I don't know why he's yelling for Maria.
Future opera singer.
Yeah.
Maybe he's got cast in as Tony in West Side Story.
Oh, let's only hope.
I just met a girl in Maria. Wailing. What was I saying about
the what?
I forget now what it was.
Sorry. You would keep telling your listeners, so they might get tired.
Oh, right. There's just more theater. A lot of theaters are opening up. Or, you know, the Alamo Draft House just opened up in downtown Brooklyn.
Yeah.
You know, in Manhattan, you've got the Quad is reopening with a couple of, you know, new, well, they're, I guess, putting aside some repertory rooms. So
awesome.
So it's going to be, it's like kind of an interesting, I think that all these theater owners and chains must think that people will still want to go to movies.
So they're like, I think they're like trying to make like a nicer experience to give people like more of a reason. Like I can drink, I can eat, but I don't know. I just went to an AMC in LA in Santa Monica where there was only like, I saw the new Marvel film, whatever the fuck it was. It was so boring. Civil War.
Yeah. I took Jacob to see
it. So boring. I like.
Jacob loves him. Oh, no, I'm kidding. Right? Yeah, no, I took Jacob to see this. I know, I get stuck. Well, they're just repeating the exact same shit.
There's no plot. And
no.
There was like
that was the better
seats,
of them.
Literally
yeah.
in this big theater, maybe 13.
Oh, no, it's like they have the recliner seats and all that, right? So it's like they've gotten rid of like 90% because now you're on these enormous.
I reclined and fell asleep. Like that was it.
Okay, well, you're lucky. Yeah. I sometimes put on my phone in children's movies because everybody's so loud and running around anyway. Well, we can wind down because you can't put off. Should you?
fine.
We're kind of talking about the theatrical, anyways. And as we said, it was directed by Elizabeth Wood, who we've been talking with. And cinematography is. We can say cinematographer, right? Do you just go by DP?
I don't care.
Doesn't matter.
That. Yeah, cinematography. DP.
Michael Simmons, edited by Michael Taylor, and executive produced by Ariel Schulman and Henry Joost.
And Christine Bichon and David
Hinojosa. Oh, Killer Films?
Yeah.
Oh, who's the... Is
David Hinojosa?
Oh, okay, I don't know David.
He's like their person there.
Oh, okay. Very good. I haven't met him. Christine's been on twice on this podcast.
Oh, cool.
Michael's been on. Almost everybody that's produced your film has been on, except for that last guy, David.
Awesome. You've got us all.
Eventually, I'll get everybody. I mean, it's just a matter of lasting. Next time, you guys come into the studio and...
Yeah. Let's do it.
Do it again, you know.
Yeah.
On the next project, or don't they have to wait? I've been emailing and trying to get everybody to come on now between projects, or, you know, because it's also nice to get people on just to talk and schmooze.
Cool.
So I've been really focused. So I've been emailing with Abel Ferrara.
Cool.
He's agreed to do something.
I was just trying to get his email.
I have it.
If only I'd had it last
week. It's easy
week.
To get. It's on IMDb Pro.
Oh, really? Well, the only person who had it's a jerk and wouldn't give it to me. I hope you hear
just go info at Abel Ferrara, I think. Just no, contact me. I'll forward it. I have it. I'll just give it to you afterwards because it's on his IMDb Pro. You can directly, any email. I emailed him last week. He emailed me back and he's in Rome. He emailed me like hours later.
Oh,
and he said he,
I should have looked on IMDb Pro.
He's great. Yeah, I know. It's a great for certain filmmakers. And also, yeah, it's just a great, I got a couple of great responses from just doing it because I have to book my show, you know, it's like,
yeah.
And I'm trying to book people that are, again, not always like, you know, like this one is great. I'm happy to do it. And I sought you out. So, you know,
thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, Michael Taylor, who, like I said, is a friend. He really was talking about this film for a long time. He's saying, you know, he was talking about you as a filmmaker and saying, this is really going to be big. And she's really a filmmaker to watch for. So,
thanks to the help of my champion. Two Michaels, yeah, couldn't have done it without them. You know, Michael right. Taylor, Michael Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, so many people say to me often, like, do this the way a man would do it. Like,
really?
They don't be scared to, like, take credit. Don't be humble, blah, blah, blah. Women keep saying that to me. Many women, actually. But I also think that too often directors take too much credit.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you... Whatever, it's your idea. You made it happen. You wrangled these people. But, like, it is such a team effort. Like, if he had sucked, yeah. The movie would have sucked. If Michael Taylor had sucked, well, it could have replaced him. Couldn't replace
those were
him.
Guys, though, they were saying, be like a man and take the credit, right? Don't share too much credit is what they're trying to say. Something like they're trying to say, don't lower...
Like, don't
minimize your
yourself,
contribution as the director and as the head of the film.
I know how fucking great I am, but right. I also think there's room for all of us.
Of course, but it's such a man... Because a woman was less likely to say something like that. Which, you know, you give credit where credit is due. That's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
How do you build? It's the right thing to do, and you build a good reputation that way, too, by the way.
You know, like, if anyone has a great idea, mm-hmm. if anyone did a great job on your project, like, that makes all of you look better. So it's like, if anything, I'm frustrated with how much of a team effort filmmaking is. I wish I could just sit alone in a room and make holograms fucking talk, and I can't wait till that can happen because actors can be a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
I love all my actors, but they're humans and they're hungry or they're this or they're that.
Mm.
And like, just like, let me type and watch you come alive.
How do you know that? Unpredictable creatures.
Like you don't talk. You just fucking do shit. You know what I mean? But like other people, it's like you're like a group therapist. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like,
that's a big part of the job.
For everyone. And that's great. And I love them all. They're all wonderful, but like, sign me up for holograms.
I think this is one of the only movies where the director let me do my thing. And like, Liz's real talent is getting people to do crazy shit. Like, that's her favorite thing to do, is get people to get their clothes off and take photos of them, you know, inebriated. And
them, not her, yeah.
Everyone.
Everyone.
It's you're just saying he's like, he just likes to get naked and he wants me to take photos of him.
Well, that's what we're going to do next.
Yeah, so, okay. You're next.
On Film Wax. Oh, sure. I'm no shame. Film Wax after the show. It's mm-hmm. like where we sit around like, you know, Oprah and just sort of put our feet up and talk about.
Damn.
Yeah.
I've never had relax. A martini.
Could it get more relaxed than this, though? You've never had a martini?
No. Or a Bloody Mary.
What? Well, how old are you? No, you don't have to answer that.
I'm 19.
I'm just like... Huh?
19.
No, that's a good answer. Right, you're of age to drink. You've never had a Bloody Mary?
No.
I've never had a Bloody Mary.
What?
Sounds disgusting.
Right? I agree.
You are going to... No. Oh, wait. No. Let me just tell you something. If I have a very good friends in Canada, in Toronto, and they introduced me to Clamato. So it's
even more clam tomato
so it's tomato juice
alcohol?
With clam juice in it.
I'd rather drink
No. You're so naive. You're both going to have. You are both going to. You're going to have. You're going to try the Bloody Mary, and you're going to actually get hooked on it, and you're going to love the martini with the olive in it, and you get it. It's. You. I'm telling you. You can
like
say
to,
no all you
I'd
want.
I like to enjoy
both...
my salt in other forms than liquid.
Really trashy things.
I do.
What do you eat salt? Oh. What does salt
like,
have to do?
I
with
like fancy.
What
food.
Does salt have to do with
well,
that?
I like fancy food, but I don't like fancy drinks. I'd rather have like a Jack and Coke.
Yeah, there's Jack. Yeah.
And a martini.
Hell no, no mixed drinks.
You know,
really
there, you can have all of them. It's not a, you know, you have the whole menu of drinks to enjoy. Not you don't have to just commit to one. So
no,
by
trying tequila, red wine, beer.
Okay. Well, I have made my choice. So, okay. But I do occasionally divert from that. Yeah.
One of those
diverts. That's right. Well, I'm okay. So September 2nd, White Girl will be in. Somebody's got BO. Is that the issue?
I did, and then I put patchouli oil on to hide it.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Cinnamon smells.
I had it a little bit too. It could be me a little too.
No, it's not you.
I have to tell you.
It's the one
earlier,
next to
no,
me.
No, but what
it
happened
smells.
Is, okay, because, okay. Not, September 2nd, White Girl in theaters in New York, Los Angeles. I'm sorry, New York, and then a week later in Los Angeles on the 9th, and then on the 16th in a theater near you.
Spread the word, guys.
And then a few months later, comes out
on demand.
Yeah, or Netflix.
Okay, so it's the Netflix deal is already signed.
Yeah.
So, and they didn't say this is going to be a Netflix film, so that's good. But that's good. So it kind of gets you a head start, maybe on the next project.
Yeah.
You're probably already.
I guess I have to
knee deep in it. Maybe I don't know.
Or I might retire. Something.
Just go out with one.
Netflix movie.
No.
Can't.
Like
Netflix original.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's probably out of a. Yeah. They probably produced. They probably bought it before it went. You know, was made, or maybe out of the gate.
Did you see Tallulah?
No, I want to see that.
Filmmakers.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Have you? Was it good? As good? I mean, I saw my queue.
No, Tallulah is really good. The way it's presented on Netflix makes you think it's a TV show.
You think almost everything they do.
Yeah, because it's like a Netflix presents.
I had that
Tallulah,
experience, right?
And
then it's over.
And the way it's covered,
yeah,
it like every scene starts at 10, and then you know, okay. Like, so and that's how TV kind of works.
Yeah,
you know,
like I mean, in terms of the energy, the intensity.
Yeah, so
I knew that one. I've had that experience where I thought like I was going to be watching a series, or the other way around. Like Netflix has yet to kind of figure that out in terms of how they mark, you know, present, because it's unclear sometimes. With Tallulah specifically, I knew that it was a feature because I remember when it came out.
Or
I think it had a theatrical limited.
It's a good film, but sometimes the scenes start so intensely that there's nowhere to go, and it ends up feeling like a TV show. So I was super confused for a while, and then after about 60 minutes, I realized I was watching a movie. But I liked it.
Right. No, it's interesting to have that experience. Anyway, thank you both so much. It was really a pleasure
to
sit with you. And I'm glad this all worked out the way it did.
Thank you.
Time to go play pinball.
He plays pinball all day and night. That's all he does.
No, God bless you. Well, it's you don't have to do any reading. And right, Michael?
It's like lights and noise. This is about all he can handle.
I don't get it. Westchester pinballs, but then again, Oklahoma white girl. So there you go. Let's say goodbye. And it's really a delightful meeting you both. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Please do subscribe to our show on iTunes. Please take a moment. And you just heard John Turturro and Elizabeth and Michael, and you owe me a few seconds of your time now where you go to iTunes and you subscribe if you're not subscribed. And if you are, just go anyway and give us a nice comment and a star rating. Please, you know, I'm asking nicely, okay? And then if you want, we're on Facebook. You can follow us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/filmwaxradio. Of course, we're on Instagram and Twitter under Filmwax Radio. You can visit our website, filmwaxradio.com, for all things wax. There is a link right on the main page there on the website if you want to be in touch. You have been. I get lots of people reaching out and saying hello and asking me to, I don't know, check out their thing. And I do every time. I get around to it. It may not be immediately, but I do. And it's an honor. I wanted to tell you one story. I recently had on a pair of filmmakers. Their names are Eric Leiser and Jeffrey Leiser. Yes, they coincidentally have the same last name. They are the Leiser brothers, and they make these beautiful, I will say, hybrid films: stop animation, live action, experimental, very poetic, very very beautiful films. And one day I was walking, and you're going to hear this if you're a regular listener in an upcoming episode in a little later in the fall. But one day I was walking down 6th Avenue from the IFC Center. And if you live in New York, you know what I'm talking about. Walking down 6th Avenue, the Avenue of the Americas, toward West Houston Street where Film Forum is. And I was heading down there. And this young man pulled up next to me at the corner on a skateboard holding a poster board of his film. It's called Glitch in the Grid. This is a number of years ago. Now,
I had just seen the trailer the day before, or at least a couple of days before, and made note of it, because at the time I was curating something called the Film Wax Film Series in Brooklyn. Cut to a few weeks later, and we're showing Glitch in the Grid at my film series with the Leiser brothers. Now, that was a few years back, but we sort of stayed in touch off and on. So they just finally came on to the podcast to discuss new projects, and we're going to play that episode soon. But there's another reason I'm bringing it up. Jeffrey also works at the Criterion Collection / Janus Films in New York. And so I got a nice invitation from Jeffrey to come up to the Criterion offices, which I've been to a number of times in the past for one reason or another. And I was invited to come in and get a tour, but also to what we call raid the closet. Now, you can go to Facebook and under my personal page and see what I'm talking about if you haven't seen it yet, but basically, or go on my Instagram account, which is at Filmwax Radio, or Twitter, and I have posted a photo, which, you know, I'm in this company of usually various types of artists, filmmakers, mostly sometimes musicians, sometimes other people, who get an invitation to go into the Criterion closet. And in that closet is not a mop. It is not seafold towels. There are no coats and umbrellas. What's in the closet are shelf after shelf of DVDs and Blu-rays of Criterion, of the Criterion Collection. Now, you know, for you film lovers, cinephiles, cineasts, whatever you want to call yourself, people that love, and also there has to be that other part of you that loves to collect, right? So hence collection, right? They feed right into the collector's mindset. I am a physical media guy. I always have been. I used to be pretty conservative, like I'm only going to get the DVDs. This is before Film Wax existed, but I would say I'm only going to get the DVDs of my favorite films. So, you know, I had the seminal films that I loved, like, you know, The Godfather, or let's say, I don't know, you had to have a copy of, Citizen Kane, say, or Lawrence of Arabia, whatever it is. I would have some of that. But at some point, once I started getting into the film industry and out of the music industry, I started to begin to just sort of let that go. And I picked up a lot of DVDs because I had a film series, and I became more of an avid film lover on a new level. And so that's a really long, really, really long-winded explanation, rationale for what it was like to be in that closet and to say, you know, well, I said, you know, well, how many things can I choose? I don't want to be greedy, which was a complete and utter lie. But I thought I could easily pick 50, 60 things. I mean, no problem, right? So they say, you know, people usually come in and choose around 10 things. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, 10 things from the closet at Criterion? First of all, that's incredibly amazing that I could get so much stuff. And then on the other hand, I'm thinking, but it's not enough either. But I won't say that, or, you know, of course. So, well, the first thing I wanted, because you know I put a list together. You know I did that. But it was on my phone, and my phone was with my son, who was in another room at Criterion having lunch and playing Minecraft. So I didn't have my phone with me. So I had to kind of go by my memory. And I knew the first thing I wanted was the BBS box set. And the BBS box set was that company run by Bob Ravelson, Bert Schneider, and Steve Blauner, BBS. And in that box set is Easy Rider, Five Easy Pieces, The Last Picture Show, The King of Marvin Gardens, Head, Drive, He Said, and A Safe Place. That last one, by the way, was directed by a very young Henry Jaglom, who was just on a couple of episodes back. I actually have several of those films already, but I did not have a copy of The King of Marvin Gardens, which I really was coveting. I love the movie Head. I don't have Drive, he said, or a safe place. So I was really, you know, and then just to get that collection, it was just, oh my God. And I, one of the things I forgot to get was Whit Stillman collection, because I wanted that. Forgot about that. Forgot about a number of things I wanted, but I walked away with quite a few, you know, films that are at the top. I also got the Apu trilogy, which is three films. So in fact, I did. I got far more than 10. I got like 15, 16, 17. You know, I got a lot. This is not showing me off very well. I know I sound like a really, like a jerk, like I'm a blowhard, but just bear with me. I want to tell you what I got, because if you're a regular listener of the show, you're probably kind of interested. What would I get? I'm thinking that, and I would love to talk to you more about these things, because, you know, this comes down to a fetish, just an obsession in a way. I love international films, but at the core, I'm an American indie film lover. So I got me Bob Altman's Three Women. I got F for Fake, which is the Orson Welles documentary, which is all about truth versus fiction. I got a copy. I mean, I know I'm going to forget some stuff. I got, The Tin Drum, which is not an American film, but a German film by also a former guest of mine. I got a copy of Paris, Texas, also by an American film, but shot by a German filmmaker, of course, Wim Wenders, who has not been on this podcast yet. But you wait. You wait. I got a copy of The Fisher King. I didn't get any Wes Anderson. I have most of his. Anyway, a couple of other things. You know, that's the crux of it. But I haven't even watched anything. It's been several days. I don't even care. I've seen all these films a number of times. It's just that, you know, it's the Criterion Collection, for God's sake. Anyway, so that was that experience. I wanted to share it with you in a little bit more detail in the background about that. That's the show, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your patience. This was a great show. Definitely a very important one for me. But there are some wonderful episodes coming up in the near future. I cannot quite announce a great actor that has agreed to do the show, because until it is a signed, sealed, and delivered thing, it's just all too tenuous. Coming up on the next few episodes, we have a conversation with the latest Jerry Lewis movie. It's called Max Rose. The director of that film, Daniel Noah, will be on. We have an episode called Scored to Death, which is involves the composers of horror film scores. We are going to invite the author, editor of that book, as well as the guy who wrote the foreword and who is a horror film producer, Larry Fessenden, is coming back. And one of the composers, Jeff Grace, all going to be on in this segment. We have a segment with the filmmaker and the subject of a new documentary called Author, the G.A.T. Leroy film, Jeff Fierzeig. I know I got that wrong. And Laura Albert, who is J.T. Leroy, it turns out. What do you know about that? The Leiser brothers, I mentioned. Curtis John, who is a local Brooklyn programmer. Joshua Marston has a new film called Complete Unknown, starring Rachel Weisz and Michael Shannon. Joshua is a great filmmaker, somebody I really like, who made a film called Maria Full of Grace some years ago. We will have an episode with actor Paul Lazar, who was on a very early episode. Paul is back. And of course, as I mentioned, Tom Noonan is coming back for part two. I'm going to put that up as quickly as I can. I expected to have already done that, so I am a little bit behind schedule. But we will also have episodes with the legendary filmmaker Lizzie Borden, as well as photographer, underground filmmaker Richard Sandler, and more. So thank you for listening. My name is Adam Shartoff. The name of this show is called Film Wax Radio. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us, of course, on the Rooftop Films blog. If you go to rooftopfilms.com, click on blog. There we go. We're all there, all the shows. Thank you for listening. Until next time, do take care.
Told me it's out there, the Pacific Vortex, paradise. You may be thinking, hey, shut up and enjoy the sunset, you idiot. Well, I don't care what you think. No one needs me here anymore. Not even my maker. Do you know her by chance? Have you seen her? First breath. I met my maker. I had a purpose. She was quick to accept me into her home and make me part of her life. But she also gave me my independence. I met her friends. She trusted me.